Welcome everyone to the Sega Guys podcast, the show that loves Sega, but hey, it's no longer a retro pod. I'm Dan the Mega Driver, and with me as ever is the Saturn to my Dreamcast, it's James the Segaholic. Mate, how you doing?
I'm brilliant, mate. Up nice and early on a Sunday morning, you know, a new recording time after the arrival of the wee one, but I'm doing good, mate. I've had a coffee thrown down my throat, so starting to feel the juices flowing a wee bit. How's yourself?
Yeah, all right, mate, no coffee here. I can't make hot drinks because it'll wake the dogs up, and then the dog will wake the house up, and then we won't be recording at all.
The struggle's real, mate, honestly, isn't it? It's just like the challenges, that's that.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking, when we used to be the Retropod in the old days, back when we first started, but we seem to do a bit of everything now, as the video on the YouTube channel says.
Yeah, the intro, the trailer, we do it all, mate. It's, as you said, we're not a retro podcast. We do everything. Channeling the words of today's topic, quite exactly. Apt, actually.
Yes, because today we're talking about Sega's CEO, COO worldwide and CEO in America and Europe. It's Mr. Utsumi. So he's had a few words to say recently in the news that have been, I think, somewhat divisive, haven't they? I think they've definitely created some talking points, and I think that's why it'll be a good topic for us to discuss today.
I mean, it took us a wee while to kind of get round to this as well. I know this is something that we kind of came up with at the time, but obviously the way things have gone with homebrew videos and modern Sega releases and retro news and other topics, and it's kind of a month late, but yeah, it was December last. Was it December 19th last year? It was just before Christmas. And Shuji Utsumi had his interview with The Guardian, the UK newspaper, and he was asked about the mini consoles, the Saturn and Dreamcast Mini, and he, in one fell swoop, he killed them off, mate. he destroyed the hopes of millions. It's like Obi-Wan, you know, it's like a thousand voices cried out in terror and were suddenly silenced. That's just basically what happened, because he came out and said that we are not a retro company. And I think as time has passed and you look at the context in which it was said, I think you can understand what he was meaning. But I think the manner in which it was delivered has made it sound more all-encompassing than it actually is.
Yeah.
But it's certainly, you know, even me, mate, I jumped in with 2 feet, as I tend to do. You know, it's like, what are you talking about? Not a retro company. I think he's clearly been referring back to the actual mini consoles themselves, but it was a very broad sweeping statement. So I think having a discussion about Utsumi's comments and Sega's direction in the modern world and, you know, what their intentions are, you know, in terms of the retro legacy. And it just goes to show me, it doesn't matter how much time passes, doesn't matter who their holding company is, who their CEO is, Sega will always be Sega at heart and deliver mixed messages. So never change, Sega. Thank you. That's it.
Yeah, I know. Rivaled only by Microsoft, I think. but yeah, I think when you was in the heat of the moment, mate, I think one of the statements you said that made me laugh was he's the modern day Bernie Stoller. And with that in mind, I think it's worth going looking back at Tsuji's background, because he actually joined Sony in 1986 and launched the Sony PlayStation and helped form Sony Computer Entertainment, which, while the dates, obviously before Bernie, and obviously Bernie wasn't so involved with Sony Computer Entertainment, but Bernie did help launch the PlayStation, was heavily involved in the PlayStation in its early years, so definitely a parallel there. He actually joined Sega as a senior vice president in the late 90s, and again, parallels, helped launch the Dreamcast. Post-Sega, he did remain in the video game industry. He helped launch the Kingdom Hearts series. Also founded Q Entertainment alongside Tatsuya Miguchi. and then came back to Sega in around 2019. It's very hard to find firm dates for a lot of this stuff. It doesn't have like a Wikipedia page, and the Sega Retro page is fairly light on content. I couldn't find much about him all over, so this is bits and pieces that I picked up, and then finally became COO in last year and CEO of Sega of America and Europe last year as well. So he's been around for the last 5 years, and I think we were talking about this. You were talking about the Super Game interview before we came on, but he's. I think it's fair to say he's definitely making his mark on Sega, wouldn't you? Would you agree?
Yeah, and he's had a couple of headlines as well. Obviously he spoke about the bringing back the kind of the Mega Drive era, kind of that, what was it he said, that they're rock and roll, to Nintendo's jazz, I think was one of his, and I think he's also made kind of reference to the fact that he wants to try and bring back the kind of the Dreamcast era kind of feel to things as well, because that's obviously where he's from. Again, see, just shitting on the Saturn, mate. That's that just some bear me did as well, mate. But I know he's, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's great to have someone in that position at Sega who at least has, a background and or a foot, in the company's kind of retro legacy. They were there at a time, before all the kind of the bad shit kind of hit the fan, obviously. But I'm interested to see just where they go kind of going forward. Let was talking about the Super Game interview that Man of Stone, sent me. It's hilarious that he DM'd me last night saying that he's got a subscription to Beep 21, a Japanese gaming site. And there's a load of kind of stuff on there about Saturn's 30th interviews and whatnot. And then if he sent me on a link to this a recruitment page of Sega Japan that had this interview in English with Itsumi and a couple of his colleagues as well about the Super Game. So the Super Game, I think, is something that it's been kind of quite shrouded in mystery. Nobody knows quite what it meant. People thought it meant one big massive online game, or was it going to be like an online streaming service, or was it the revival of old IPs? And nobody kind of knew. And this interview kind of gives it a few extra details. We'll touch on it later on. But he's definitely making his mark. I mean, we gave him kudos, earlier on whenever, the whole Microsoft acquisition talk came up for the 350 billionth fucking time. It's when he was asked, are they looking to be acquired, or are they looking for any kind of deal? And he's like, no, not now. And people went, but not now. You didn't say not ever. And I took that to mean not now, as in no, we're fine. And again, it's that whole thing where we're talking about context and translation. Did he mean not now, as in not right at this moment, but maybe later? Or not now, as in maybe once, but not anymore? So it's, again, he's good at these kind of statements, mate.
It's people
He just like,
talking.
that's it, mate. He just likes to, he's giving us like topics. Maybe he knows, maybe watches a pod or something. I don't know. Let's give these two British guys some topics to talk about. I don't know. But he's good for news. But you can't argue with the direction that Sega have went under. Was it 2019 that he came back? And you can't argue with the upturn in the company's fortunes. I mean, I know it might not be the IPs that we want to see right now as older Sega fans, but you can't argue with the output, between what they've got internally plus that Atlas stuff. And it's just, they're knocking everything out of the park. They were arguably publisher of the year last year, without doubt. So it's just, you can't argue with where they're going under his leadership, mate.
No, not at all. I mean, they were publisher of the year in some Microsoft awards that I saw recently, which, I think they were very grateful because they had publishing rights for, not publishing rights, but their marketing rights for things like their Metaphor. They had Persona 3, which was on Game Pass, and then you could get the season pass with Game Pass as well. But they had multiple Game of the Year contenders. Sonic X Shadow Generation's been a big success, sold 2 million copies, and was very well reviewed for a modern Sonic game. So 2024, it did feel like it was like a breakout year. It's funny because the game that I was looking forward to the most was Infinite Wealth, and there just seemed to be so much more that was kind of on par and perhaps even better than Infinite Wealth. So it does feel like they're taking them in a strong direction, and No, this year you've got, at the time of recording, Virtua Fighter Revo comes out tomorrow, so it'll be, well, it'll be a week, it'll be a week ago as when this goes out. We've got Virtua Fighter back, we've got Revo that's launched on Steam, the new game in development. There's an awful lot of excitement around Sega now, and I think a big part of that is, when we're, with the Super Game stuff that we'll get into, but taking a lot of these games multi-format, I think that's obviously a big topic at the moment. Whereas Microsoft announced pretty much all of their games that their developer directs on PS5, probably be on Switch too.
I seen the melt. I seen the meltdown, mate. It was the console war fanboys were going crazy. Like that was just, it was like fuel to their fire.
But that's where the growth is, mate. It's where, it's multi-platform games. Squaresoft or Square Enix have said that their future games won't be exclusive to one platform. They'll be doing simultaneous worldwide releases. And you look at a franchise like Yakuza, and it was actually, when you look at the timelines, it was Yakuza Like a Dragon that launched worldwide pretty much simultaneously, because previously, Yakuza 6, we had to wait. Yakuza 0, we did. Yakuza 5 almost didn't come over at all, and it was Sony that had to publish it on the PlayStation. But pigeonholing yourself onto one console just isn't the way now. So it's great that Sega are doing that. If they could bring out Unicorn Overlord to the PC, that would be great. So I think he's definitely taken the company in a strong direction. And yeah, I was going to mention the Xbox acquisition stuff, mate, because he would have been there surely when Okawa, because he was senior vice president, probably second only to, God, I've forgotten his name now.
Who were talking about Ian
the Iramajiri, that's the
Oh.
one. He might have been around for those. And they were going to Microsoft saying, maybe
Maybe
you're.
that's what not now meant.
Exactly.
That's
We
what
were there.
he's I was like,
We
not
were.
now. I
Well,
remember
maybe once.
we came crawling to you for help and you said no. It's like not now. It's
You missed your chance.
like not today.
So yeah, he's definitely, I think he's definitely got taken Sega in a solid direction. I think it's clear that he's got a vision of where he wants to take Sega. What you're saying about them wanting to be the Mega Drive, as in the rock and roll era. He talks about Sonic a fair bit. He wants to make Sonic the face of the company, which, to be honest, he already is. I think the fact that the
Aye.
games are much better received these days. Plus, you got the success of the movie franchise for all three films, cumulatively over $1 billion now.
I've still not seen three.
It's brilliant! It's brilliant. If you, we'll have to do a review of it for the pod or something.
I was meant to go and see it. I had tickets to go and see it. I had them booked at the view, and then things came up and didn't manage to go.
Oh
So,
no! Ah,
Sky
sounds.
Store, mate. When it comes on Sky Store, I'll be like £15. I'll just buy it there and watch it in the house.
It comes out soon, I think. It's in
Aye.
on digital stores already in America. But yeah, going strength to strength. But as you say, mate, it was the double, kind of the double hit of shooting down the Saturn and Dreamcast mini consoles and saying that Sega is not a retro company. That's kind of caused a lot of debate, caused a lot of anxiety. Because on one hand, you're saying, all right, well, we're not making these retro consoles. We've got a Mega Drive Mini and a Mega Drive Mini 2, and that's your lot. Mega
Aye.
Drive Mini 2 came out in Itsumi's tenure in 2022, and a Mega Drive Mini 1, I'm pretty sure, was what, 2020, 2019?
Was all a couple of years before me, aye. So he's either just in the door or, been in maybe about a year at most or something whenever the first one came out. So he's been about for the mini consoles at least, yeah.
So, it did get me thinking about, what does he mean by retro? What is a retro company? What does that mean about the direction that Sega are taking them? And the more I think about it, the more, with some kind of thought and kind of introspect, it does sort of makes sense because if you think down, you know, what would you say is a retro company?
Oh, I mean, obviously, if you go straight in, like a retro company would be a company that solely focuses on retro products, you know. So obviously, if you're looking at it purely from a hardware perspective, which is what I think Sumi-san was obviously doing, then his wording's correct. But if you're talking about as an overall company kind of vision and structure and history, then they are a retro company. But as I said, the video I did, like, you know, you can be one without ignoring the other. You can say you're a modern and a retro. You don't have to kind of pigeonhole yourself into either category. And again, even in the kind of statement that he gave the interview, he said, you know, we're proud of our legacy. We want to embrace it. You know, so again, like Will saying, we're not a retro company, in the same breath, he acknowledges that there is a legacy rooted in retro. And of course there is. Like the whole history is there, but it's almost like, and I think a lot of people have picked up on this as well, is that, excuse me, that while he's from the Dreamcast era and he's maybe made kind of hints at, you know, bringing back that kind of vibe, you know, I don't know, mate. It's like a retro company. I would think if it was solely focused on retro on its own, you know, then. By obviously Sega's legacy is far too, it's decades old. You know, it's there's too much there to completely ignore everything that's going on. But I don't think I think in killing off the consoles, the kind of mini consoles, I think that's what stung the most. I think a lot of people were really hankering for them. And the fact as well that in the Mega Drive Mini 2 in Japan, they had given that survey, you know, and asked people, what kind of console, what next mini console do you want from Sega? And you know, it was Sega Saturn was top, followed very closely by Dreamcast. So, you know, I don't know, mate. Obviously, they're not solely going to be a retro company, as we've just spoke about. Their kind of modern output has been absolutely insane, but they can't ignore what has come. So that's why I said, mate, you're a retro company. Stop ignoring your legacy.
Yeah, they're it's an interesting one because I think my mind went to Nintendo because this is a similar company, and the problem is always, mate, I think is in the messaging. Are Nintendo a retro company? Well, all of their big IPs are legacy IPs. You look at Sega's IPs, their successful IPs that they've used this year. You know, Sonic is really the big legacy IP. They've got Atlus, who have got the Persona series, which is kind of a legacy IP. But then, you know, the big games from Atlus were also Metaphor: ReFantazio, which is a brand new IP, Unicorn Overlord from Vanillaware, also a brand new IP. Whereas, you know, Nintendo were all about, last year it was the Zelda game, you know, Mario Party. So they're still t steeped in their tradition. And you could Nintendo could be considered a retro company in a way because, you know, technology-wise, they're not ones that are leading the pack. You know, they've got the weakest home hardware out of the three. They've got the worst by far online service. And a lot of their games are callbacks to those classics. You know, you've got 2D side scrollers, you've got top-down Zelda games. You know, it's the one with Princess Zelda last year. But again, it's the messaging. So it's Nintendo just don't say much at all unless they really want to say something. So they
They
you
don't
you you
they don't need to. You know what I mean? The success speaks for itself with their console. They don't need to say anything. It's like,
well,
you know, it's like it's
when they've only had one very successful generation since the Wii. And the Wii U was I love the Wii U, but it bombed. But then they had the NES and the SNES Mini, and then everyone was like, "Oh, N64 Mini." Nintendo just didn't say anything. They haven't said that we're not making one. They haven't said they were not a retro company. So it's strange. But I suppose for Sega, especially when you look at Itsumi's comments, like he wants to bring back the Mega Drive era of rock and roll. back in the Mega Drive era, and it's part of what we've talked about, with Saturn Dave and Mel before, and that Sega were Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. They basically went through every generation with an identity crisis. Same with the Saturn. It's like they didn't use their legacy IPs on a lot of these consoles. At least they used them quite sparingly. The Mega Drive, you had Space Harrier 2, Super Thunder Blade, and a few others that were on Master System. But then, after like 1990, you'd barely get any follow-up Master System franchises on there. Same with the Saturn, that launched with barely any Mega Drive franchises. So Sega have always been a, if you look at historically, I suppose they've always been a forward-looking company rather than one that's looked back. And as frustrating as it is for us fans, because we have wanted to see sequel. How long were people asking for a new Streets of Rage? Why isn't it on Saturn? Why isn't it on Dreamcast? Asking for a Saturn game on the Sega Saturn of all things. And even in the modern day, asking for modern remakes. It's, yeah, they have been forward looking, but I do wonder if they are kind of pulling the plug on the retro releases a bit, because again, you look at Utsumi's tenure, and I think, the death of Sega Forever. And obviously that came back in a different way, but the death of that came under his stead, didn't it? And that was a huge, huge retro-focused part of Sega at the time.
Aye, and then 2 days ago it came back. Like it's been rebranded with the new era, new energy logos, like Gillis's hat and the glove, for Axl and the skateboard and for Jet Set Radio. So again, like it's like Sega Forever, which was a brilliant page, I think it was Danny that ran
Danny, yeah.
that. Like he's with the company anymore. But it was brilliant, and it was like stuff for the vault as well. It was like just full of interest and info and pictures and videos of just kind of old stuff. It was brilliant, and then like also it's been down for what 18 months or something. It's been a good while. It's been down now, and then it was time extension. I noticed that they put a story out saying that someone had alerted them to the fact that, or they've rebranded their Discord and their social accounts. It's like, so are you actually going to start bringing it back, or is it going to just be used as a marketing kind of channel now? Is it ever going to go back to the way it was? So that's the kind of thing. If they put the kind of energy into it that it had before, it'd be brilliant. But I've got a sneaky feeling that they're just going to use it for marketing,
I just thought
but
that it was for the new era games. I think it's just
I.
it's gonna move away from the history of it, which is a real shame. The feeling I got was it's gonna be solely focused on promoting those new era games.
It certainly looks that way for the logos they're putting up. They're focusing on those soul things. And again, I think this year we're going to see some pretty big updates on that. I imagine we're going to start seeing some gameplay for those games coming through. Maybe that's the channel that they'll exclusively, air them on. I can only think that's the kind of direction it'll go down. But sadly, I don't think it will come back to the way that Danny had it, And it's something that we always talk about with Sega. For a company that's got such a rich history, they seem oddly happy to just either ignore it or just let others tell the story. They don't shout about their own successes enough. And that gets back to the whole thing about the mini consoles. It's like, are they almost ashamed of like sitting, not so much like Dreamcasts, but I think because end of the day, if you want to use that word, failure, but they represent a time in the company when things weren't anywhere near as kind of prosperous as they are now. So is there maybe in the back of Utsumi's mind this thing that, well, if we bring out these two products, one, they're going to be expensive, two, they'll be very niche, there'll be no actual returns really to make on them, but they also represent a time in the company where there was a lot of turmoil, a lot of negativity, a lot of change, and maybe bringing back products from that era, as much as they're beloved by a core fan base from back in the day kind of thing, like us and many others in the community, that they don't want the modern day successful Sega to kind of have any kind of link to these two failures. You know what I mean? So I don't know. It's, and a few people have picked up on that, have said that, that maybe there's a bit of shame there Like the bell, shame,
Yeah.
shame, Game of Thrones style, but I don't know. It's weird, but aye, that's what it is, mate.
I do think of Nintendo again. And again, it's Nintendo do great by being dick sometimes and saying nothing. Because Nintendo are very, very similar in a lot of ways, because they had the mini consoles, albeit Nintendo made them limited releases, and it's like, yeah, you can have the NES Mini, but we're only gonna put it out for 6 months or
Remember
whatever.
that they went for a fortune at one point. Remember, you couldn't eat one of the boys in my work bought one and sold it for three times the price. Dick.
And this it's the same with the Super Nintendo Mini as well. You can't buy those new anymore. You look for one, and all you get are like the clone consoles with like 500 games put on them. But Nintendo just put those games out, and everyone's like, oh, N64 Mini. And rather than like Sega, like I said, shooting it down, they just do Nintendo and don't say anything. And I think the difference is you look at the Switch Online service, and I think I've subscribed to Switch Online for on and off for various reasons. And I think that the retro kind of content on there is kind of underwhelming. You've got a handful of Game Boy Advance games, more Game Boy games, NES games, but it's still nowhere near as big as it was like on the Wii when you had the Virtual Console.
Yes,
The
I.
Virtual Console was absolutely superb, and the Switch Online stakes are pretty rubbish. And consider they charge you so much for that, and then you won't have to buy the expansion pack to play N64 games. And again, I think the only difference between Nintendo and Sega in that respect, because Sega obviously tried to do, the limited release with the Mini 2, albeit made it Amazon exclusive. So that
Remember
was
that?
a
That
yeah.
was.
But the difference is that Sega, as you say, Sega are happy for others to tell the story, whereas Nintendo send the lawyers around and send you a cease and desist.
I don't talk about us. Don't use our music. Don't use our gameplay. No, this either they're very, very strict. I mean, if Sega ever got to that point. Remember the this total tangent. Remember the Super Sega guy that was Alejandro? He tried to claim that using the Super Sega name is no different to a channel calling itself the Sega or something. And I'm like, don't talk shite. It's like, hey, Super Sega. It's like he's fake cease and desist letters, then he gets his fake approval letter. We will tell our lawyers that we are sorry. Oh, Jesus Christ. No, mate.
Oh,
No.
God.
Bye.
Oh,
No,
yeah. So
if Sega ever got to that kind of Nintendo level in terms of content, I think we'd be pretty screwed. But thankfully, again, it's almost like the fact they ignore it so their legacy so much, it kind of benefits us. I mean, but
look, we get fantastic stuff like Radio Sega, where we get
exactly.
some. Whereas Nintendo shut down all the YouTube channels and all the other media that plays their music so that they can have their own Nintendo version of Spotify.
No, I mean, and see what you were talking about the Switch Online thing there, by the way, because obviously we got the Switch for the Wii and for our Christmas, and it came with 12 months of Nintendo's online thing. So, and I remember whenever we had the Switch Lite a couple of years ago, and I checked out the kind of online the retro stuff on there at the time, and see the fact that it changes. I know it's good that they mix things up, but it also feels a bit like a kind of control freak. It's like, you were enjoying Super Street Fighter 2 or Street Fighter 2 Turbo? We're taking it away. It's like, you know, it's and some of the stuff on there is pretty crap. And the layout of it looks like a bad jigsaw puzzle.
I know.
It's like you've got Japanese box art that goes up and down the way, and you've got the PAL ones that go, you know, horizontal, and it just all mismatched. It's like a game of Tetris with cover art, mate. It just screams control freak, you know, which they are. We know they are. You know, but
Nintendo and Sega, I think, very similar in that respect. And I think it does come down to the messaging. I'll say on Nintendo, a retro company, I think they're probably more of a retro company than Sega, but they're still guilty of, they don't do anything with F-Zero. They don't do anything with other IPs that, they've been sitting on for ages, haven't had, so they're just as guilty. But I think Sega.
They haven't done anything with F-Zero since the SNES because Sega made the last good one.
Well, yeah, they did. Yeah, that's it. It's like Sega Lord X said when, when we were talking, we had him when we were talking about when Sega nailed arcade gameplay on the home and said that's it. Similarly, we've nailed that. We've got the best F-Zero we're ever going to get from Sega now. Let's go home, get some pizza.
That you're never going to bet at it, so
Exactly. GX is godly. But the one thing that I think Sega have always been different is because they've always pushed boundaries. You look at, to their detriment almost, you look at the Sega Saturn era, the Mega Drive era, Mega Drive and Saturn era especially, they had VR headsets in development. They had the 32X and the Mega CD, which were, whilst didn't perform and in hindsight weren't great ideas, they were Sega pushing the boundaries of technology. Virtua Fighter has always been traditionally a game that pushed the boundaries of what fighting games should be about. And I think you can kind of see that with the Super Game, if we come onto that interview. And it does sound like they're embracing modern technology on there, with Shuji Itsumi talking about NFTs is an awful word. I don't know how old that interview is, but you think about things like he's talking about AI, about cloud, about multi-platform gaming now. And aside from the obviously eye-rolling NFT mention, it does all seem mostly positive and forward-thinking stuff coming out of Sega. And the Super Game is basically a AAA game that's obviously, in keeping with everything else, a live service game that launches on multiple consoles and is integrated with social media.
Yeah, so in the interview, again, there's no date on it. I'm just kind of scrolling through it here. I can't see an actual date mentioned on it. But it says here when I get it. So, yeah. When you're talking, when you say Super Game, how big are we talking? So it says, allow me to state the four major points that we feel define it. One, being multi-platform. Two, developing multilingual support for players across the globe. Three, simultaneous worldwide launches. Four, being a triple A title. So, in short, I'd like you to imagine that the scale we're aiming for is that of a global blockbuster game. So, and then there's a follow-up comment from Hisai-san who says that presently several Super Game projects are in progress. In the department I'm in charge of, there are already around 50 people involved in the initial stages. I anticipate that our team will eventually need hundreds of members. So, listen to that. I think that dates to pre-New Era, New Energy. So, New Era, New Energy is the Super Game. I think, that it all ties up. I think reading between the lines of that, this interview I would imagine is kind of predates the New Era announcement that we had. So, but it's always back to that thing about embracing modern technology, global launches, targeting modern gamers. But at the same time, trying to kind of use the modern IPs. Because in that interview as well, Itsumi-san talks about, the classic IPs, they have the potential with modern technology to become, global hits, which is true. It's if they can capture the core gameplay of what made the originals so special, but, embrace the modern technology, it's a task, mate. It's like Sega couldn't even better Crazy Taxi themselves,
No.
Crazy Taxi 2 and 3 are dog shit.
What is it? Yeah, I mean, I was messaging you while I was playing the map for Crazy Taxi 3. Crazy Taxi 3 is
Yes.
playing the original classic map, and I was like, you know what? This isn't as bad as I remember, but let's go to the new map, Glitter Oasis, and oh dear, that is a terrible, terrible map. But yeah, back in the day, they couldn't better Crazy Taxi themselves. But it's interesting the games that they have chosen for the new era, because you've got. And you can obviously that would they've been in development before Utsumi came over? Possibly, but I think you look at him joining in 2019, that was what, 5, will be 6 years ago soon. Probably came in with that directive. And two of the games on there are iconic Dreamcast games. And then he's talking about the Mega Drive energy. You've got Streets of Rage and Golden Axe on there. And then obviously Shinobi traces its roots all the way back to, 1987, pre-Mega Drive, Master System era, I suppose. But yes, again, you do see that the Saturn release is conspicuous by its absence. But I suppose you did. One thing that was good was to see him come on to the Virtua Fighter Direct and talk about Virtua Fighter and the anniversary. And I suppose spiritually, it is a Sega Saturn game, but it does seem to be a focus on Dreamcast and Mega Drive, which I suppose is the are the successful consoles in the West.
Aye. I mean, the question that Usumi-san was asked just kind of ties into the dates you were talking about. It was asked, tell us more about the 5-year plan you announced in 2021, which revealed your plan to create Super Games. So Usumi says that we conceived our plan in 2019 when he came in the door. We've been keeping a close eye on the shift in mega trends and have discussed how we can ride the tide and maximize on Sega's strengths. See if he said ride the tiger, mate. I'd have just had so much respect for him. See if he just said, so Sega has the potential to beat its competitors thanks to our brand power, our fan base that spans worldwide, and everyone's anticipation for us. We're aiming at a global audience, making the most of Sega's IPs, delivering content that matches our tried and true approach. We see this as the answer for our future growth and have made it the basis of our 5-point plan. So, looks like he basically came in the door and that's never all kind of kicked off then because the dates all tie up. You know, they announced it in 2021, but they conceived it in 2019 whenever he came in the door. So,
Yeah, and in that respect, I think he has been a kind of a breath of fresh air, to be honest, because Sega were, I wouldn't say that they were directionless, and they had another very good year not too long before, but you do have that, you do notice the change. I'm just looking up to see when Persona 4 came to Xbox, and that was January 2023. So that was Persona. Really was the last bastion of Sega games that hadn't come multi-format. Atlus was traditionally, at the time, PlayStation only. Obviously they had before the modern day, they had games on the Sega Saturn. They have had games on handheld. They had games on the 3DS, but most of their big games were on PlayStation. Since then, you've seen them pivot over. We've had Yakuza Like a Dragon launching worldwide and launching on the Xbox One. You've had the Yakuza games come to Game Pass, so that has turned around the fortunes. I think there was something I was reading where the Yakuza series had sold something like 5 million units before 2020, and now that it's gone, multi-platform, that you can buy them on PC, Xbox. I think the first one's coming to the Switch soon. The series has sold like something like 20 million copies, massive growth for the series in a few years. He's turned that series kind of into a household name. Now, as for the direction of where it's going, as far as, moving away from its roots maybe a little bit, as
A
it tries
little bit,
to.
mate. It's pirates.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it's always been off the wall, hasn't it? But
Aye.
it. But the movement to Hawaii, as they're trying to get that global audience, I do worry that it's maybe losing its identity. It will lose its identity a little bit. I mean, obviously the pirate stuff, it's just so off the wall that but
Sega.
you are seeing a bit more success. So we're seeing games multi-format. We're seeing classic IPs come back, and there was a few rumors of even more games coming to this kind of new era initiative. So there was the Echo of the Dolphin leak the other day, and then God, what's his name? I can never pronounce his name, but the mind behind Echo the Dolphin
Yeah, he's been teasing
tweeted
some
out.
stuff as well, aye.
And I think
Aye,
we've seen
so,
Altered Beast has been mentioned as well, so.
aye. So there's other stuff there. I think we might even get another announcement with more games, like a second wave of games. You know what I mean? But I'm just kind of scanning this interview while you're talking as well, because it's brilliant. I mean, fair play to Man of Stone for sending us this. His timing could not have been better. You know, given the topic, but. He says, what do you envisage the Super Games, or envision, sorry, the Super Games to be like? Says Sumi says, we are developing multiple titles under the Super Game framework. Each title will be distinct from one another. Well, they are. They've picked a pretty wide range. But I have no shred of doubt they will push the boundaries of interactivity further than any game released until now. For instance, we used to call people who buy and play video games gamers. However, we will probably no longer call these people gamers. There's even a whole subculture of just watching games in itself. There's so much potential in the relationship between people who play games and those who watch them. I think we can leverage that potential and bring about a new form of entertainment. So I hadn't read that before because I'd have probably, if I just read that at a glance, I'd probably would want to tirade about that as well. So, what do you mean I'm not a gamer? It's like,
Well, I
but
again,
streaming
get
is
on.
massive. You know, it is. You can't, I personally, I can't sit and just watch somebody play a game for hours. But look, you can't argue with the success of a Twitch. You know, it's people want to just sit. Look, my sister-in-law, look, she can't play games as much as she used to do because she's got kids. So while she's doing housework, she watches people play the games that she likes to play. Like she's a lot of the Elden Ring and all these kind of things. She's a big kind of fan of that franchise. So she'll just watch people on Twitch while she's about the house. She can't play them, but so she kind of vicariously lives through the streamers, you know, plays it through them. So, aye.
Something that we have to probably think about one day if people are interested. If anyone's interested in watching the Sega guys stream games, let us know. You know,
Yeah.
might be something we'll look at down the line.
If you want to watch me hit restart on Sega Rally 300 times in 5 minutes, then if that's your form of entertainment, folks, I can certainly oblige.
But I think, you know, allowing for obviously our English isn't his first language, so allowing for some kind of that element, I think he's pretty close to the mark. And yeah, it's kind of like I get where you was when I read that bit, I was like, what do you mean there's no such thing as gamers? And when you think about it, gaming has become so entrenched in the modern day, in, you know, there's you wouldn't call someone film fans, would you? Everyone watches movies now. It's just like everyone plays games, you know. The term
Why don't we
gamer,
play together? Sorry.
we all play games. But yeah, you know, everyone plays, and whether it's, you know, if you're playing on console, and I think that sometimes I think we're all guilty, both in the retro scene and in kind of the modern console scene, because you see it in the like the fanboy tirades when someone was saying, oh yeah, PC gamers don't buy games, they pirate stuff, and a lot of these are. But you know, the PC market is huge now, and people there's lots of people playing PC, lots of people playing on mobile. The mobile market is bigger. Mobile probably has more in common with kind of classic games than the modern games. You know, we've got a war with Atreus shouting at you on how to kill something over and over again as you press one of your like eight buttons to try and initiate a QTE. Or, you know, you've got these games on mobile, some of them they've just got, you know, you just got your direction and one button. You know, that's what old arcade games were. And I do wonder sometimes, if it's going on off a little bit of a tangent here, I do wonder sometimes if that's what modern mainstream consoles have lost, that simplicity, because a big part of this going multi-platform and trying to look for new growth opportunities, the way that Microsoft are expanding into other platforms, the way that PlayStation are apparently rumored, you know, they're already putting games on PC. There are teases that they might be going in a similar direction because PlayStation 5 growth, depending on where you what you read, either isn't as strong as a PS4 or is lagging behind. So where's that audience going? The mass market are all going to mobile, you know, for the simpler games, the ones that are pick up and play, because that's what got us into it, mate. We were playing pick up and play arcade games as kids. We were going, you know, Virtua Fighter, three buttons, you know, not like, you know, Virtua Street Fighter 6 uses all eight buttons. So there's Mortal Kombat 1, you know. It's the simplicity, and that to your average player, the average person is overwhelming for them, which is why Sonic was such a success. All the direct, just the direction and one button, you know, that's why it appealed. And I think when he's talking about anyone can be a gamer, Anyone, basically everyone is now. They're as ubiquitous as film, TV, books. People say that they're avid readers, avid moviegoers, but people still do it kind of just as a, as a everyday task. So I don't think he's far off the mark there.
There's no need to kind of pigeonhole people now. I think, like as you said, mate, do you know many Netflixers? Do you know many Spotifyers? It's a form of entertainment. It's just basically something that's become, I think the term gamer, it came about at a time whenever I think it was more, sitting in your bedroom playing games, whereas now it's morphed into this massive multi-billion, pounds, dollars form of entertainment. It dwarfs music, it dwarfs movies. It's a fair point, mate. It's just an entertainment form. It just falls under everything else. It's quite funny, says I, but movie goers. You don't just people just watch movies. People watch TV, listen to music, you play games. It's like so.
It's all part of the same thing, I think. As you say, is the kind of the days of the old the old stereotypical gamer, so to speak, are gone. And that's I think that's because as an industry it's matured. It's become more accepted. It's more ingrained into social culture. We've got more and more video game adaptations into film now, so you see the media crossover. The biggest Japanese artist streamed internationally last year was Atlas on Spotify.
Wow.
Yeah,
Seriously?
I think it was their third biggest Japanese artist.
Wow. There you go.
So it's everywhere. So I think despite his comments being somewhat questionable at times, as you say, he says things that are definitely open to interpretation. We're not open to be bought by Microsoft, not yet. We're not a retro company. Gamers shouldn't be called gamers. But I think sometimes if you sit back and think about what he's trying to say, I do think some of it does make sense.
If you take it at just total face value, like, and if you go into it with like angry man shouting at cloud kind of mentality, then but I think if you read his comments or his quotes in con and that we are not a retro company, like when that was said, that just wrote headlines. Like every like games news site would have just jumped on that, and they did. It was like, in a way, it's almost like kind of like the Sun, like taking a quote from a football manager after a bad result and just amplifying it, just kind of twisting that wee bit of focus on one part of the message. But I it's I he is he's clearly he's wanting to merge, I think, the best of both worlds. I think he's trying to find a way to hook into old kind of Sega legacy IP, but not just bring them back for the sake of bringing them back, not just doing what's been done before. I think that kind of ties it that we are not a retro company anymore as well. It's that he wants these games, as he said in that interview, he believes have got the potential to be like global hits, to be triple A games. And the challenge in that is in taking what you said, mate, about older games and how they were so simplistic, is in taking simplistic games and upgrading them using modern technology and making them triple A games. Like, how the hell do you make Crazy Taxi a triple A game in the context of the Crazy Taxi back in the day, when gaming was as it was then, was arguably a triple A game in that era. But given how technology's moved on in the 25, 26 years since, how do you make Crazy Taxi a triple A game? So that's like Shinobi. GoldenAxe, how do you make these very simplistic games triple A games? And I suppose that's a challenge. That's your job, mate. You get paid to do that. You get the big bucks at Sumisan. That's your call, mate. But I'm interested to see, but he certainly does, as you say, mate. He gives you talking points. And I think just taking his sound bites, in isolation, can be a bit unjust to him, like me calling him the Bernie Stoller. I was like, I called it his Bernie Stoller moment, and it was I was a wee bit annoyed when he said that we are not a retro collective.
I forgot you weren't the only one, mate. A lot of people were.
Aye.
Yeah, I mean, you make a good point because Crazy Taxi would have been a AAA game. You know, it was using
Back in that
cutting-edge
era, yep.
technology. It was one of the first truly open-world maps. Voice acted, fully licensed soundtrack. You know, the work. So it was a big game. Just wanted to get your thoughts on a couple more points, mate, because of that. First of all, I think in terms of the direction of travel with the modern games, I think we can probably agree that he is taking Sega in the right direction. Obviously, the success in the last year, you know, the excitement around obviously using legacy IPs for these super games. I think in that sense, Itsumi definitely is. You know, did the thumbnail before with this was Saint or Sinner. You know, he definitely is. In got the Halo one for that, wouldn't you say? He's definitely in the right direction.
Aye, no. I mean, it's good to have somebody, as we said before, that he's rooted in the kind of the older Sega mindset, but he's clearly got an eye for what's happening with kind of modern trends, you know. So in that regard, you know, you can't argue with where he's taking the company, mate.
Yeah, I think that was the easy one. But the other one, I think, is the other question I'm going to ask is a bit more difficult. So with the repurposing, shall we say, of Sega Forever under his tenure, with the "we are not a retro company," the kiboshing of the two retro consoles, the removal and delisting of a number of games, legacy Sega games, should we, as retro Sega fans, be concerned about how he's treating that side of the business?
See, with the kind of the mini consoles, right? There's no reason to be concerned per se because like they don't exist. So it's not as if they were announced and then were kind of like done away with. It's not as if he's kind of cancelled anything. The Sega Forever stuff, you know, I think we've said that he's going to use that, or Sega will use that for marketing purposes. I think it'll do that. I think any of the new era, new energy stuff, I think will be announced through the Sega Forever channel. That's just my hunch. Whenever you kind of read his comments in that interview and you look at your stuff in context, worried about. Think he's taking the company in the right direction. I think he's being cautious. I think I think he doesn't want Sega to get kind of dragged too far back. He's trying to find a balancing act, I think, of embracing the kind of legacy stuff, carefully choosing which IPs he brings forward, maybe try to think what ones are best suited to be upgraded to AAA games. You know, so maybe that's why something like, say, for example, we'd love to see Knights from, you know, Saturn updated, but maybe he feels that's too niche, it's too arcadey kind of score attack. Maybe what kind of basis could he have for upgrading that? And then obviously Crazy Taxis are score-based attack kind of game, but by all accounts, I think they're going to try and take that into some kind of online kind of tournament aspect. And again, I think you look at the way Crazy Taxi's looking, if you look at the kind of the idea behind it, and you think about his comments about people watching it, I think Crazy Taxi on like a Twitch kind of service where it's like maybe 20, 30 people in different taxis vying for fares and fighting each other. Again, it gets back to that being about entertainment. It's fun for the people who are playing it, but for the people who are watching it as well, it would be entertaining, you know. So I don't think we've got anything to be concerned about in terms of for us, for our kind of impact. I think we'll always have the kind of niche that, you know, we grew up with the company in a different time and it meant different things, and it was at a time when it was innovating in different ways. So we'll still have that to kind of talk about and report on and kind of cross over into the kind of modern stuff. But I think in terms of what he's doing, reading his kind of comments, I think he's, after the initial uproar of the reaction to the "we are not a retro company," I think he quite clearly is trying to embrace the best of both, but he's trying to do it in a very kind of measured way. So I don't think there's any threat to kind of Sega's legacy in retro from Utsumi. I just think he's trying to kind of he's trying to balance both, the whole yin yang thing, isn't it? He's trying to kind of, you know, keep things rooted in modern while respecting the legacy. And that goes back to what he said in the Guardian interview. You know, we appreciate and respect our legacy. We want to embrace it, but they don't want to go all the way back. I think what "we are not a retro company" means is that they're not going to do what they did in the past. They want to do more. So they respect the legacy, they respect the IP, but it's about taking that forward rather than just going back and doing what's been done before.
Yeah, no, I think so as well. I think my concern is more kind of from the fact that we won't get retro releases anymore. So unless they're arcade games like Ocean Hunter, which is great. It's great that Ocean Hunter, for the first time, is going to be playable officially in the home, is available in Yakuza Pirates.
By who the suited same, is that, though?
Yeah, I know. They chose it very, very intelligently. But the amount of games that they delisted from, you know, digital services recently is, I think, a little bit worrying. And we don't know what the replacement is. So obviously, we have had a retro, quotation marks, release under his tenure, which was the Sonic Origins pack, which itself was a little bit controversial because they stripped all of those games out of existing services, so you couldn't buy them anymore. You could only buy Origins. They've got such a rich history that it's great that they're honouring it with new entries to games. And I think you've hit the nail on the head there, mate. They're getting the balance right between, you know, looking after their new IPs, but also bringing back a lot of their old ones. The fact that they've had so many IPs that they could draw on has been a source of frustration for Sega fans for years. But, you know, part of me thinks maybe I'm worrying for nothing, because obviously they pulled Virtua Fighter 2 from Xbox 360. Well, the Xbox 360 store's dead. They pulled it from the Xbox store and then went to Limited Run Games and slapped it on a disc with a bunch of stuff that people can buy. So obviously they got what's that?
Whenever that happened, part of me was like, please tell me that you haven't taken all of these off and you're going to bring them out through Limited Run Games as physical copies of all the companies to shack up with, man. No.
Yeah, and that's where my concern comes from, you know. Because Jet Set Radio and all that sort of stuff, they had digital releases and they're all largely gone now. Crazy Taxi was another one. They took loads of games down. I think the hope amongst the retro Sega gaming community was that they'll bring them back, because these were great games to play, these games. You know, you could play the actual arcade games on Xbox, you know, Fighting Vipers, etc. That's the one concern that I have about Utsumi. You know, I think he's, you know, as far as the modern direction of the company, I think he's great. As far as respecting the legacy, I think he's done a much better job of honouring and bringing back legacy franchises than his predecessors of the last 20 years. I just think with the shutting down of Sega Forever, with removing games from digital storefronts, whether they're going to, you know, give us something, you know, are they going to give us the classic games? Or, you know, maybe it's that, you know what, you know, we've got guys out here that are playing the ROMs, they've got ODEs, why bother making anything? You know, they can play games, we'll just focus on the future. Maybe that's the fault.
See, I think the out that Utsumi will have for the "we are not a retro company" and removing the games from other stores is that, and I know it's been rumoured, and I think it will happen, and I think the caveat will be that they'll look at it that they're not doing it as a retro release, they're embracing modern technology to bring retro to the masses. I do think Sega will release a Nintendo-style, like, you've got lots of the Switch Online's got the store with the classic games on it. I think they'll eventually branch into that. I do think there will be a Sega streaming service. And I think that they won't just have their games on it. I think the movies will be on it. I think you'll have, honestly, it's just a hunch I've got, I think you'll have like a Netflix of Sega. They'll have all their movies, all their kind of cartoons, you've got your Sonic Prime, all your stuff like that, and they'll have all their games on it. And it will be a standalone service that you'll subscribe to. You know, obviously you'll be able to install it probably on, you know, your consoles, but smart TV, streaming games, whatever. I think, again, it's about leveraging modern technology to bring that experience. I think that delisting those games, I don't think Utsumi has ordered those to be delisted just to be anti-retro. I think looking at the way that he speaks, there's method behind the madness. So I think that we're going to get an all-in-one. He talks about entertainment. It's not called gaming, not called gamers. I think he's going to have a Sega all-encompassing streaming service with games and movies and TV shows.
Yeah. Do you know what? I completely forgot about the rumors of the streaming service. And yeah, I think that you're completely 100% right, mate. I think that is definitely something that's going to happen. Yeah. Sega putting all their, putting everything behind a streaming service. Ridiculous. Sign me up.
it's like the gif of the guy for Futurama. Shut up and take my money.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, I don't need another streaming service, but yeah, I imagine I would be there day one. But yeah, I think that pretty much covers everything, mate. You know, it's been an interesting one because, you know, as we said, he's an interesting guy who says some interesting things, and I think the direction that the company is going overall is positive. So we will see, and we'll see where the future of Sega comes from, you know, the future of their new IPs and how we can play those classic Sega games. You know, I'd definitely sign up to the streaming service, and we'll see if our viewers and listeners, if you would too, let us know in the comments below. Yeah, thanks for this one, mate. It's always good to touch on these modern topics. That's why I kind of had the little note in there about us being a retro pod, because that's how we started, and
hello.
We've evolved over the years.
It's good as well that this one kind of, we didn't record it when we were meant to. I think it's good that it's kind of been allowed to kind of simmer a wee bit, and various other kind of follow-up interviews and other kind of news sources have came out and things have happened that have allowed it the kind of the context to be looked at. I think it would have been a very, very different show if we'd come on like the Wednesday after the interview went out, you know, and recorded it. I think it would have a very, very different chat. So I know it's been good, mate. It's always, you say, it's good fun to touch on the kind of the modern stuff. But I'm sure it's Utsumi-san will lead us forward, lead us. Like a football team, lead us. Like a football manager. Sack your board. It's been good, mate. I've enjoyed it. It's been a good chat. Always good to kind of touch on these more kind of, not so much serious, but more kind of modern day, a bit kind of deeper thinking kind of topics than just talking about games solely. So I've enjoyed it, mate. It's been good. Thank you.
Yeah, it has. But we'll get talking about games next time.
I apologize to anybody who, you know, wants to hear us talk about games. It's like, sorry.
Yeah. But we'd love to hear what you guys think about Mr. Shuji Utsumi and the direction of Sega. You know, the work that he's done in the last 5 years, the success of the games in last year. What do you think about retro Sega games, their availability, how Sega's handling their legacy? Let us know in the comments below or in the Sega Guys or Radio Sega Discord. But James, as part of our rollout of our new tiers for our members, we do have the ability for our All Access members to pose their questions and their thoughts on the topic and have them read out on air. So we do have a couple for this episode, don't we?
Yes, we do. So thank you very much to Andy Mackey and Craig Williamson. So Andy's take on today's topic, he says, so for me, it sounds like Utsumi is caught between a rock and a hard place. He knows how much of a good place Sega is in now, bringing out some fantastic titles last year, but he doesn't want to rock the boat too much by acknowledging classic Sega. Even though people like us who follow this fantastic channel, thanks very much, Andy, have the fondest memories of Sega in their heyday. They are already looking back to their classic IPs with the announcements of the older games from last year, so they must know how much people have been asking for some, quote, retro Sega. I would rather him say we looked at the options on building a Saturn and Dreamcast Mini, and we just couldn't get to a point where we were satisfied with putting out a product which would satisfy everyone due to license issues. Everyone knows that Sega is a retro company. It's a current company as well with the titles they are putting out currently. Sony are still putting old PS1 titles on their store. Nintendo are the same, which we touched on. Sega should always embrace their history, as it is part of who they are and why we as Sega fans love them. So Fair
Thank you
point,
very
Andy.
much, Annie. Yeah, I forgot about the PS1 titles as well, and Microsoft as well. And I think it's kind of a similar story, isn't it? Because they're, again, they're not exhaustive lists. They're lists of games that are hampered by licenses. So, yeah, interesting parallels with Sega there, I think, between all the companies, really.
And Craig Williamson, thanks very much, Craig, says, to me, it's like they're having a selective memory of the past, picking out the great moments and trying to forget the worst. But a Saturn Mini and Dreamcast Mini and even a Master System Mini would sell, and I think it's an opportunity missed for sure. Saturn wasn't Sega's future back in the day, and it seems like it's not in their past either. So again, touching on what we said about perhaps that shame, of those products coming from a time in the company's past where things weren't quite as rosy as they obviously are now, and maybe not wanting to kind of tie the past and present together too closely. But a couple of great comments there, guys. Again, Andy and Craig, thanks very much. I see it's something we've rolled out for the new All Access tier, where All Access members can comment on a members only post for that tier and put questions to us for the upcoming episode. So it's brilliant to see we got a couple of really good points there from Andy and Craig. So thanks very much, guys.
Yeah, thank you very much, guys. And viewers, listeners, as I'm saying, love to hear what you say. So get in touch via the various channels. And if you want to become a member, if you want to be extra mega and support everything that me and James do in that way, it starts from just 99p for our new basic tier. And James, that includes people getting their name read out. It's a special thanks to all our All Access members, doesn't it? So who are the All Access members who have contributed to today's show?
Our All Access members for today are G-Man, Stiff Peaks, I Am Mikowski, Craig Williamson, Sega Saturn Shiro, we have Resident SD, we've got P-Wall, Tom Thumb, Peter007, Andy Mackey, Nick Tullock, Craig Sager, and we have an all-new member, David Owens, who joined us within the last few days. So thank you very much for all your support, guys. To all our members and subscribers, thank you so much. And if a monthly membership isn't your thing, no problem at all. We appreciate your support in liking, subscribing, sharing the content, getting involved in the live chat, getting involved in the comments. All that stuff just helps us get noticed and then getting involved in the channel. So thank you very much for your continued support, guys.
Yeah, and thank you very much just for tuning in, watching, and if you've enjoyed what you see, and if you haven't already, give us a like and a subscribe because we really appreciate it. It really helps the channel. We are on our way to 10,000 subscribers, which is beyond our wildest hopes and dreams, I think, when we started this channel. At the time of recording, I think we're just 300 away. If in a week's time when this airs, who knows where we'll be. So thank you so much everyone for supporting us. We'd love to hear what you think. As I say, get in touch, but until next time, we will see you on the Sega side.
Sega forever!